This is On the T-Box on THP Radio,
your number one source for golf equipment news.
Here's your host, the Dean of THP.
And there it is. Welcome everyone to THP Radio for another exciting episode of On the T-Box, sponsored by US Kids Golf. I'm your host, Dean, and co-hosting this episode of On the T-Box with me is my fellow staff writer, Dan. Dan's reviews can be found on the THP homepage, and he can be reached both on the THP forum as well as on Twitter under the handle @CanadanGolf. Dan, welcome to THP Radio for our very first episode together of On the T-Box.
Thanks, Dean. I appreciate it. Excited to reunite with that Dean and Dan teaming up.
Yes, we did have that magical show that one week back at the 2014 PGA Merchandise Show, or 2015 PGA Merchandise Show. All these shows kind of run together now. Before we dive in on this one, let's give our listeners an idea of what this show is going to be all about. On the T-Box is a golf podcast that's going to be based on equipment, apparel, accessories, and really anything else interesting that might come across our desks. Today, we have three topics on our sheet that we're just waiting to tee off on. Those topics include golf balls under $20, limited edition club finishes and when they're released, and we're going to take a look at alternative options to long irons and hybrids, such as the Cobra King Utility and the Ping G crossover. So with all of that said, it looks like the starter's calling our name, and we are now on the T-Box. Dan, recently we put out a question to our readers and listeners to talk about golf balls that cost less than $20. Now, for us, the topic came up because, you know, we both received some golf balls that were under that price point in Pinnacle for me and Max Live for you. I'm going to throw it over to you really quick to just go over some comments that we got from those readers, and then we're going to debate a little bit and get into the golf balls that we received.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. To be quite honest with you, being so comfortable with a premium ball, I wasn't really sure what to expect. So I put it out for our readers, and their response seemed to be pretty consistent around searching for solid feel and in all months. Not really expecting a ton of action around the green, but not hard as a rock, showing a little bit of decent performance, but more specifically and more entertaining to me was something that doesn't make them mad when they hit it OB, and I'm pretty sure we can all relate to that.
Oh, that's certainly one for me. I know we've talked in the past, and we all have those holes on the golf course, you know, whether it be a long par three or a tight par four, that, you know, we tend to lose a lot of golf balls on. It might not set up to the eye or might not be the shot shape that you want to hit. I know I'm guilty. I have a par four at home that's narrow. It's not long, but I tend to hit the ball into the left hazard all the time. And when I try to aim right, of course, I put it in the OB to the right. So I tend to reach in to the bag and find a ball that's inexpensive or under that $20 price point. Because at that point, I'm like, well, you know, I just lost it. I don't want to lose, you know, a Pro V1 or a 330 RX, something I paid a lot of money for in that hazard.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. And let me kind of push this towards you with your review. We're obviously both pretty inclined to play our premium balls, but when you did pull that Pinnacle out, did you feel like you lost quite a bit of quality away from moving away from the premium ball, or did you see a lot of the same characteristics?
You know, I saw a lot of similar things on full shots. You know, off the tee, I saw some really good distance, which was nice. I'm not expecting to lose difference going with a cheaper ball. You know, in my mind, I actually should be hitting the ball a little farther with a less expensive ball. I'm not sure why that is, probably because of the harder cover to it. But I tend to, you know, lose some performance around the green. You know, you don't get the ball to spin as much, you know, on those, you know, 50-yard pitch shots or anything closer than that when you're expecting the ball to be able to control the spin, and, you know, the trajectory of the ball as well. But the full shots going into greens and, you know, off the tee, I thought the balls performed relatively well, especially the Pinnacle Soft. You know, the two types of Pinnacle balls I've got, the Rush and the Soft. I preferred the Soft. It felt a little better around the green to me. It still didn't spin like the premium balls that I would normally play, but I thought it was a really good option, especially off the putter.
That's great. And when you talk about Soft, I know that a lot of golfers kind of move into that better compression in the colder months. Do you think the Pinnacle Soft would be a really strong candidate for golfers in the, certainly in our brutal climates coming into November and December when the weather kind of kicks in and the feel in the hands is a little bit more palpable, I suppose.
Absolutely. You know, it gets colder. When the compression drops in the golf ball, we get a little better performance. And by we, I mean slow swingers like me, get a little better performance because you can actually compress the ball, you know, when it's only, you know, 50 degrees or 45 degrees, or even if you're, you know, crazier than I am, less than 40 degrees and you're out playing. Not only that, I mean, it's also, you know, a little better peace of mind if one rolls under a leaf and you can't find it because you didn't spend that much money for that golf ball. There's nothing more frustrating on the course to me than that. Hitting a good shot, you know, having it go under a leaf, and then, you know, the sun gets low. You never, ever seem to find that golf ball.
We've all been there. And then when you think about off-season play, no handicaps involved, I'm guilty of hitting two or three balls. And I'll tell you what, when they're cheaper balls rather than those premium balls, hey, if I hit one right, I hit one right. We'll see you later.
Yeah, we just move on. So I liked it. You know, the time that I've spent with the Pinnacle Golf Ball, I was really impressed. I know I gave some to my father. He's always saying, give me a soft ball to play. And, you know, this ball just says soft right on it. So I give it to him and he's like, oh, yeah, that is soft. I think the naming convention of it was really well done. I didn't like the name Rush so much for the other ball, but soft for this one, I'm telling you, that's a great name for a golf ball. And I think it's one that will sell relatively well for Pinnacle.
Well, that's fantastic. Let me ask you, Dean, something that I experienced during my time with Maxfly Speedfly. I seem to notice that the cover itself, and maybe it's just simply the different design and build material, but I found that it was really quite durable. Embarrassingly enough, both off the fairway and off the cart path. But are you experiencing anything like that with the Pinnacle?
Yeah, I really was. You know, I've clanged them off trees, off cart paths, off pretty much anything you can. You know, catch a rock in a bunker, anything like that. The cover's been pretty durable. That's always been one of my big complaints about shelling out, you know, $40 to $50 for a dozen golf balls, is the cover on them is so soft that, you know, sometimes you only get a few holes out of a golf ball before the cover is torn up, whether it be from, you know, hitting an errant shot off the path or off a tree, or just having, you know, fresh, you know, wedge grooves that just really shred the cover. So that's always been a sticking point to me to spend that, you know, a lot of money for a golf ball. This one doesn't do that. The cover stays relatively intact, which is nice. And, you know, I could put a ball in play, and I played the same ball for roughly 22, 23 holes over the weekend, which, you know, that's just impressive enough for me to keep a ball in play for that long. But the cover was still in really good shape when I took it out of play.
Yeah, I'm experiencing much the same. When you talk about playing for at least a round or more, it was a point where I had pulled the same ball out for, I'm not embarrassed to say, probably 40 holes. And by the time I gave up, I think I just hit it into the heather because it was so beat up. But at that time, if 40 holes in is more than you could ever ask for, I think, for any type of ball, whether it's a $20 or $50 a dozen.
Yeah, for 40 holes, that's extremely impressive. I lose a lot within 40 holes. But yeah, 40 holes a lot. So tell me a little bit more about the Maxfly ball that you have, Dan. I know you did an experiment where you gave it to some players who play, you know, higher-end Titleist balls, and you have some thoughts of theirs.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. And I actually have a couple friends who tried it, one who consistently plays premium balls and the other one who plays recycled premium balls. One of them is pretty staunchy with the selection process of his equipment, a very well-known brand. And he got the Maxfly in hand and was extremely surprised at not only the distance, but the interaction with the club head. Not unlike what you mentioned, from pretty much tee to anything outside of 100 yards. Getting into those touch shots, and certainly for the style that the Speedfly is, you're bound to see a little bit of reduction in spin, and certainly the way my course was playing had it played a part as well. But there was genuine surprise that a ball of that price could be as understanding of the type of swing he puts on it, anywhere from, let's call it, 100 to 300 yards. And I think that's pretty telling of what club companies or ball companies are doing right now, making a great product, regardless of the price.
Yeah, we really see that out there, you know, not just in golf balls, but really in, you know, golf industry everywhere. You know, there's lots of solid products. Price is just a number. Now, you know, we see some iron sets that are extremely expensive, over $1,000. You know, we see some other iron sets that are, you know, $500-$600 that are still very, very good clubs. It just comes down to the threshold of what people want to play in the premium for it. But there really is no bad equipment out there anymore.
Yeah, and certainly not just what they want to play, but what suits their game the most. And frankly, when you're playing $2 to $5 golf balls, I think that the frequency of losing the ball is and should be a factor in what suits your game. And I think if players can get the same or close to the same performance on, let's call it 70% of their golf shots, I think realistically, this should be an experience where they do start to go look at those $20 or $30 golf balls because they are performing.
Absolutely. And for our listeners out there, the review for the Pinnacle golf balls has been up now, so you can go to thehackersparadise.com. You know, if you don't see it on the homepage, you can search for Pinnacle golf ball review and it should come up. And the MaxFly review will be coming up soon, if it's not out already by time this broadcast is put out there. So please, you know, take the time, go there and read the reviews, because both are pretty going to be well done, and, you know, get a little more information of just what we talked about here. Let's move on to topic number two, Dan. You know, in this past month, we've seen manufacturers come out with some, you know, same clubs, different finish option. You know, we're calling them more of a limited edition finish. Nike's coming out with the Vaporfly driver in black, which is changing the crown color from the photo blue finish. And on the iron side, you know, Callaway just made some news coming out with the Apex Black Iron, which is a black PVD finish on the Apex CF16 irons. So this topic could go a few different directions. I'm going to just start with your thought of the two new finishes on these clubs that we're talking about, black on the Nike driver replacing blue and the black option for the CF16 irons.
Yeah, and I think the question you asked actually has kind of two responses. When you say the word new, I think, is it genuinely new? Is this new technology to the company? And is this something they could have released 6 months ago, 5 months ago, 5 weeks ago? When it comes down to black on an iron, it seems like every company is racing to find that perfect PVD finish that will have incredible longevity despite being driven through the turf constantly. It's certainly not something that would be a reflection of the top of a driver or, in many cases, parts of a fairway wood. So I think we are dealing with two different animals here. And let me kick that back to you and say, do you find one more suitable than the other, or are you quite satisfied with the way they're releasing?
You know, I'm in the camp that I would like to see these releases come out at the same time. Talking more about the CF16s right now, you know, I was lucky enough to receive a set for the Granddaddy. If the black finish had been an option, it would have made me make a different decision. I may have gone that direction. If I was somebody who went out and paid, you know, the $1,100 price tag or the $1,200 price tag for those irons to see another finish come out, you know, 6 months later and want to spend that money again to get the iron in a different finish, I don't know. I like the finish. I like the release of it. I wish they did it at the same time. And I've kind of always been that way, you know, going back to TaylorMade when they did the R1 and then the R1 black. And then they came out with the AeroBurner. And then a few months later, they did the AeroBurner black. It would be nice if all of that stuff came out at once so that you can make a decision, kind of like the Cobra model is, where you could pick, you know, pretty much any color that's in the rainbow and put it on your club head and off you go.
Yeah, and it's certainly an understandable opinion. I guess my follow-up question to you, and this is more playing devil's advocate than anything else, let's assume because we don't really know the answer right now, let's assume that black finish wasn't available in December when you had the opportunity to acquire your current Apex irons. Would you prefer to see companies wait until their following release cycle to produce this type of finish on an iron, or do you like that they're pushing it out, assuming the technology has been refined to a suitable standard prior to that next release?
Yeah, I don't know if there's the answer for it. I mean, It's nice that the finish option has come out. I do like that. If it wasn't perfected or ready enough for, you know, mass release back in, you know, the fall when these clubs came out, then yeah, that's okay. You know, that makes it a little bit different in my mind rather than, you know, pushing it out later. And that probably could be the case. You know, they put the black PVD finish on the MD3s. I'm not sure if it's the exact same finish that's on those wedges. Those wedges could have been a test case scenario, you know, to see how they, you know, the finish reacts over time, to see how the public reacts to that finish over time on a wedge. And then if they like it that much, you know, sure, we'll put it on the irons. Like you said, I don't know what the real thought process behind it was, if that's the way it went, but I'm glad the finish is out there.
Yeah, I like that it's different, certainly between the irons and the drivers, because let's be honest, we've seen different colors and different releases from pretty much every company with regards to colors being on the crown of a driver. And certainly when we talk about Nike, I think back to the Volt Vapor Pro, I believe it was played by... Who had that on tour, Dean?
Michelle Wee had that out. That was a big one for her.
Yeah, and when you think about that, you think about, all right, should they release it in Volt? Should they release it in so-and-so? Maybe it's not so much that they should be doing limited release, but maybe they should be doing that custom offering where, hey, if you want it, expect it.
Yeah, and I like that. You know, if you want to customize it, we've seen some companies do that as well. You can, you know, create your entire driver head based on paint and paint fill on the wording and the movable weights if they have one. So we've seen some companies do that. I like that, you know, Nike's given the option. Last year with the Volt, I thought that was kind of sharp. I wish that came out at the beginning, you know, as opposed to the black with the Volt swoosh on it. I'm a fan of the blue. I actually really like the look of that head. I've yet to see the black in person, but I remember they did this a few years ago with the Covert. They came out with a black head. And, you know, matte black is really difficult to perfect. And I'm hoping that the matte black on this one is a little bit better looking than the effort that was put in on the Covert.
Yeah, it's safe to assume the time that's gone by and the companies that have success with matte by now, I would imagine it's going to be fantastic. But back to the custom offerings, I'm not saying that I want hot pink, but I'm saying, Dean, I really like the color blue. And if I want a blue driver, give me the chance to have one.
Well, I mean... You could have the original, the Vapor Fly in blue. But you never know. We could get you one in hot pink too. Maybe hot pink with a blue swoosh on it.
Oh, I know a couple guys that would fight me for that though.
There definitely are a couple guys that would do that. A couple of our readers really, really would love a hot pink driver. You know, we know them by name and they'd be all for that. Okay. One last thing on the finish, Dan, back to the iron side of things instead of the driver. Talking about the black finish and how it wears over time. Have you played a set of black irons in the past?
I haven't played black irons specifically, but I have played numerous wedges that came in that black finish. And quite honestly, I think with the interaction of the sand, that is the most visible sample of what can wear well over time, most specifically. And certainly currently in my bag, the Bridgestone J15 forged wedges, which the 58 looks, I'm not going to say bad, but very clearly worn, while the 54 and the 50 look pretty fantastic.
Yeah, that's always the big thing. You know, I'm a fan of black and the wedges as well. You know, my Cleveland RTX 2.0s are black. And, you know, just like you, the 58 from being used in the sand a lot has a lot of wear to it. I played some Vapor Fly Pro irons earlier in this year, and that black finish held up well. How well it would hold up for a season, I don't know. So I'm interested to see where this direction goes for Callaway, how many people get them, and what kind of, you know, reports back that we hear on the finish holding up over time. So if anyone out there is listening and they've ordered a set or they are getting a set, make sure you let us know how the finish is holding up once you get them in play. You could send a tweet to us either at Canadan Golf or to myself at Dean of THP. Use the hashtag THP Radio and you'll be able to get us some information, something we might be able to talk about on a future show. So that will be a good thing for us. Make sure you do that. Also, Dan, I want to send out a quick reminder to any parent out there who has a child they're looking to get involved in the game of golf. Our friends over at US Kids Golf offers clubs for your young ones that range from ages 4 all the way up to 12, and the US Kids fitting system is a little different than other companies. It's based on height, not by age. That way, no matter what age your child is, they'll always have a properly fit set of clubs to help them learn and enjoy this wonderful game. And guess what? For when it's time for them to move up to a bigger set, because kids eventually do grow up, they've created a great trade-up program. More information on this equipment and their trade-up program can be found at US Kids Golf. So, Dan, let's get ready to talk about our final topic of the day. This one's going to be a fun one for both of us, I think. We've talked about the budget-friendly golf balls. We've talked about the different club finishes on some limited edition releases that are coming out from Callaway and Nike. Now we're going to look at two companies, Ping and Cobra, and some alternatives that they've presented to hitting long irons and hybrids. I know you spent time with the Cobra King Utility. That club has a lot of technology packed into it, including their MyFly adjustable neck system, so it has multiple lofts for it.
Yeah, and honestly, I could sit here and talk about that club for a very long time, so cut me off when appropriate. I really enjoyed taking the time to review it. It's certainly of the leading edge technology, being that you are able to adjust. There was questions that came out, how much value is in it? How strong could that MyFly adapter really be? And a club that is far more aggressively into the ground than a typical three wood or driver, or maybe even hybrid would be. What the reality was is golfers get the opportunity to pick the loft they want to play. That seemed to be the biggest and most relevant element involved. I started at somewhere around 19 and I moved it to 21 to suit my bag just a little bit better. And frankly, it fit in like a glove.
Now, how much I know when, you know, a big concern of me when hearing about that technology is, you know, with the drivers, they have the sole, the smart pad that keeps the driver face looking more square. You know, on an iron, it's a little bit different. How much variation did you see in the iron face when changing lofts?
That's such a good question. And it's not so much that I was looking towards how the face looked, but more how the flight and the performance of the golf ball. I know they do have draw settings, and maybe some people get a little bit more wrapped up in the potential adjustments that would be made. But I'll tell you what, Dean, with the exception of not putting it on the actual draw setting itself, I saw some pretty consistent flight, simply more on lines with being up versus down, as opposed to looking strange at address or flaring right or flaring left. I'm just not seeing those variables, and certainly not during the testing process, that some people are genuinely concerned about with a club of that design.
Yeah, that's interesting. That was certainly the first thing that jumped out at me when we saw that club get released. And, you know, of course, when you put the thread up on the THP forum with the hand-to-hand pictures about, you know, how it looks at different points at address, that was something that was a sticking point to me. One thing I think Cobra doesn't get a lot of credit for, and they should, is how good their adapter looks, at least on the drivers. And I'm sure it's probably the same on the iron. When you look down at it, it looks just like a normal ferrule.
Oh, it's unbelievable. And frankly, it kind of disappears after a couple swings. It's not overly large. It's not something you haven't seen before. But when hitting the ball in the range of 3, 4, 5 times, you simply get comfortable with the way it looks. But I don't think that was the most, the biggest change between a different utility for me. What I seem to notice about the Cobra, the King utility, was the sound. And I think Cobra really has something going on this year with sound between their drivers, woods, and now utility irons, is that they have this really unique sound to them. And I think there's something to be said about blending your sets well and getting that sound that makes sense to you. And I think anyone who plays, let me push this to you. If you're playing a driver, a fairway, and let's call it a utility, are you hoping to get a similar sound? And if you don't, are you feeling like the input you're getting is a little bit off?
It's nice if you're playing, to me, it's nice if I'm playing one brand that I get one semi-unified sound, if that's what you mean, because it helps reaffirm that I'm making you know, good contact, you know, sound being so much of a big part of feel, it having something that's going to sound similar from driver down to a utility, which is difficult, you know, because the acoustics of a driver, you know, the head shape of it, there it's so much more mass than what is in a, you know, a utility itself. So the sound's obviously going to be a little different, but having a unified sound, you know, it's something that I really, really prefer to have. And it's why I tend to go with the same brand, you know, Woods and hybrids that I do with a driver.
Well, I think it's a good opportunity to ask you. I believe you've recently reviewed a utility yourself from Ping.
Yes, I actually have it in hand right now. And the funny thing is, I was thinking a lot about it. And when you mentioned sound, it was one area on this club, you know, being the hollow body construction, that was just off to me. The sound was just not, it wasn't pleasing to my ears. And at the same time I had it, I had a Ping G driver in my bag too. And the sound's just a miss to me. However, there were a lot of good things on it. You know, being the hollow body construction, I saw some really, really good forgiveness out of this club and some really incredible ball speeds. So I imagine you probably saw something similar. The constructions of these two are in the same ballpark, at least. You know, they're not exactly hybrids. They're a little bit different. So they're built somewhat to similar.
Yeah, and I've actually hit the Ping as well. I found the profile to be pretty interesting. It almost seemed to be a little bit wider from face to back, but also a little bit shorter from, I would say, sole to top. Did you see anything like that? Do you kind of see where I'm coming from with that?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I mean, this one's not, you know, when you see the profile, you know, it's wider at the bottom. It doesn't look like, you know, yours is more, has a much more iron shape to it. This really just has an iron face to it. It's just the best way I could describe it. It's different. It looks like the body of their old G15 hybrids, just with an iron face on it. So it's a little bit awkward looking like that, but the performance was good.
Well, that's what I love about the idea of utility. And I almost think that a good term for these clubs would be a transitional club, because you have so much freedom to define how it should look, whether it should be the width of a hybrid, whether it should have the similar shape and sound of an iron. And one thing that I discussed with numerous readers and actually fellow playing partners was understanding the difference between making yourself comfortable with a graphite shaft versus a steel shaft. Now, I don't know what actually came in the Ping, but I'll tell you that a Rogue shaft came in the Cobra, and I actually quite liked it. I didn't expect to. I play 110 gram shafts in my irons, and I expected to be the kind of guy who would want it to play a lot more like an iron. But Dean, I'll tell you what, having that lighter shaft, I was really able to get the ball or get the head through the zone, really catch it clean, and get some great numbers off tee boxes where I needed to feel comfortable. How about you with the Ping?
Yeah, I had the Ulta shaft in there. It's labeled at 70 in the stiff flex that I had. It's at 76 grams, which I play graphite Aerotech steel fiber shafts in my irons right now. Those are about 95 grams. So the weight wasn't a big disparity, like it sounds like it was for you, going from, you know, over 100 grams in your irons to something a little less weight in the Rogue. But I liked it. I thought the shaft, I don't know, the Alta shaft seems to really be hit and miss for people, from what we're seeing online, people talking about, our readers talking about on the forum. I thought it paired well with this head. I got a really good ball flight with it. The only thing I didn't like about this club, and something I wanted more of, was more height. Now, I had the 3, which came in at, I think it's like 18 degrees. I could use a little bit more loft than that. I would really want to try the 5 crossover, you know, puts it at 24 degrees, something I could probably hit higher and maybe land a little bit softer. But as far as the total package with the shaft, I thought it held up perfect for my swing.
Yeah, that's a really strong loft too. Maybe I'll follow up with this question to you.
Yeah.
Do you see these utility products being more of an iron replacement or a hybrid replacement? Because when you say 25, it seems to me that you're looking for that club that will maybe improve your accuracy or consistency or even distance with a 5 iron, not a 3 iron.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's really why this whole crossover idea or utility from elsewhere came from. You know, what is it going to replace? You know, on Ping's website, they're saying that, you know, the 3 could replace your 3 iron, your 7 would. and it's going to act like a three hybrid, except for people who tend to hit hybrids and they hook the ball a lot. This club's kind of meant for that. You don't get the hook with it because of where the weight is. For me personally, what I would be looking for is, like you said, something that could get the ball up in the air, maybe improve my accuracy. That's why if I had a choice, I probably would take one of these with higher loft to it, because I'm not looking to replace, you know, my 7-wood slot in the bag or my 5-wood slot in the bag, something I use for distance. I'm looking for something for me that's going to give me a little more control, a little more accuracy, and a little more height on the ball.
That's interesting. With the Cobra, by the time I had changed it to 21 degrees, I was focused far more on my 4-iron than I would be on, let's say, a 3-iron or a 5-iron. But I suppose we all have a place in our bag where we have to define that genuine transition between that scoring iron style mentality and that distance building, longer fairway, or let's call it a stronger hybrid situation.
Yeah, it's the game of golf. You know, we all have our bags set up a different way, and there's lots of products out on the marketplace that could help everybody set it up individually. There's nothing really unifying about, you know, you and I play different games. Me and my father play a different game. My father and your father play different games. So it's everyone's bag would be somewhat different. You could fit one of these clubs that we're talking about in those players' bags or in our bags. It would just be a little different scenario.
Yeah, let me ask you a final thought on the utility in total, Dean. I know that hollow body construction in total has improved. We've seen certainly an interesting collection of ideas and creations because of it. What are your thoughts on the sound? Because we're certainly dealing with something that's different than what a traditional iron should sound like, in my opinion.
Yeah. On an individual club like this, talking about the sound, the acoustics kind of have to be, they're kind of on their own, really. This one was a little bit off to me, but that's because it's off compared to what the other clubs that I'm hitting. I think the hollow body sound in general has gotten better. You and I played a round of golf down in Mission Inn, I want to say a year and a half ago, and we had a mix of irons in the bag. Some of them were within the same set, hollow bodied compared to, you know, the traditional setup, and the sound was just so different. Going from a 4 or 5 iron that was hollow bodied to something that had more mass on the inside, the sound was just so different and, you know, at times off-putting. But I think these companies have found a way to perfect the sound or tweak the sound to make it a much more improvement and seamless transition.
Transition, yeah, absolutely. and goes back to my comment about Cobra and the sound that they've created, I believe, through their King lineup. It's certainly unique, in my opinion, to other club companies and what they're producing. But I really personally like that they drew it directly into their UT. It's something that I think makes a lot of sense. And I think it's something that also creates confidence when you go to hit something and it sounds a certain way. That's certainly something that I would look for, there's 100 words I could use for how insane I am when I try and put my bag together.
I was just going to say how finely in tune you are with your clubs, but if you want to use a different term, you could go ahead.
That's very gentle of you, Dean. I appreciate that.
All right. Well, that is a wrap. Big thank you for Dan for co-hosting today. Remember, you can join us both on the THP forum to discuss and debate everything we talked about here. And of course, follow along on Twitter at Dean of THP and at Canadan Golf. Don't forget to head over to iTunes and subscribe to the Hackers Paradise podcast channel. That way you will never miss an episode of the Golf Industry Uncut, The Dean Has Spoken, or our show on the T-Box. And while you're at it, take a minute to leave a review with your thoughts in iTunes with what your favorite THP radio show is. So for myself and Dan, we hope you enjoyed this episode, and we look forward to meeting you again on the T-Box.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.